So welcome back to Pax Europiana and the debate about the Cold War, the Second Cold War. In this series, we're discussing about this confrontation we unfortunately are since 2007, since Putin declared the Second Cold War at the Munich Security Conference. But in this episode, I would like to take you back to the start of the Cold War, how it started, and basically to discuss about how and the Western German integration into the Western structures has worked and what that means for Ukraine today. It's a time I can, you know, the horrors of Second World War are well documented. It's a terrible tragedy which happened, and it was Germany who had the second time started a world war, and with its allies, Austrian, we were also guilty, and it's a terrible tragedy. And obviously, after the liberation and the defeat, depending how it was, the breakdown of the German Nazi regime, the Americans and also the Russians were obviously, you know, bent on making sure that this will never happen again. And the plan was to deindustrialize Germany and to basically avoid a third world war led by Germany. I mean, it's understandable. But what happened at this moment? I'm not talking about 46, 47. And this is the most crucial time to understand the present world order, because what happened was there was this escalation at the Straits in the Bosporus. There was this obviously unwillingness of Stalin to remove its troops from Eastern Europe. The idea was certainly getting very clear that it was not meant as a liberation of Eastern Europe, the areas where the Red Army was liberating them from the Nazi terror regime, but it was meant as a permanent kind of integration into the Soviet Empire. And this took some time to understand, because, of course, after winning against the evil empire, Hitler Germany, the idea was to get the boys back to America, and now there will be peace, yeah? That's how America works. Get the people back to the economy and get the people back into the normal life, and the war is over, so it's done. But in no way it was done for Stalin. Stalin, it's important to understand from the whole concept of the Bolshevik Revolution, it was always meant as a global revolution. It was always meant that Russia is just the first country, and Germany, obviously Germany, was very important. It was for most of the Soviet and communist leaders, the place they knew, they lived partly either in Switzerland, Austria, Germany, or they admired Germany. Marx and Engels were Germans in many ways. Yeah. So the whole idea that Germany is the next country was leading to this whole big civil war in Germany, supported by the Soviet Union in 1920 to 23. So ultimately, the idea to conquer Germany or integrate Germany or, in their view, liberate Germany from capitalism was obviously one secondary aim of the whole World War II. And so the idea to stay and to in the territory was obviously from the beginning very clear. It took some time for the American leadership under Truman to understand. But by 47, and especially also, I think it shook really the American establishment, and that the country they were taking they were occupying. But once you occupy it, you also have this care obligation. And it was a terrible winter of hunger in Europe and in Germany especially, but all over Europe. Hundreds of thousands of people died in this winter hunger in 46, 47. And so, under this double pressure of Soviet expansionism and Soviet's takeover of power in most Eastern European regimes, and also the terrible situation economically, the policy in the United States changed gradually, you know, as a response to the Strait crisis, and then also the Truman Declaration, and then came the new Joint Staff Security Directive in July 47, and so the policy gradually shifted. But what was the really big, big thing, obviously, because in the beginning it was, again, a joint management of the occupied Germany, But the Soviets were treating the West very unfairly and started to overprint the currency, which was jointly issued. But the Eastern Germans, as always, they liked to print money as much as they could. Yeah? That was famously the slogan of one of the Bolshevist revolutionary, to use inflation as the machine gun against capitalism to destroy the currency. So basically, this method had a long-standing tradition, and they overprinted the mark. Okay, that leads, of course, that you export the costs of your own occupation regime towards the Western allies, who don't print less. And obviously, Germany had already a big history of inflation, and from the end of the First World War and the crisis during the German Civil War until 1923. And so the situation was that the allies understood they have to manage the free Western zones better, and so gradually came the conviction that it's absolutely necessary to introduce a new currency which is independent of any kind of Soviet manipulation or money printing. So a new currency for the free occupation zones. It was, you know, because from the American perspective, the world is one, it's a global one, and you know, we in Europe tend to think everything is about us, but a similar policy was also done in American occupied and liberated and managed Japan. So basically, Western Germany and Japan got a currency which was backed to the US dollar. And here we're talking about a fundamentally important reform, because when you talk about the Western German economic miracle, then obviously when you talk about economics, you have to talk about currency. When you talk about currency, there is one way to do it with money printing and inflation and devaluation and constant sand, a kind of an empire built on sand, on quicksand, where the more you do, the more you tread into it. Yeah? Or you have a firm fundament, as the dollar-backed currencies are, and the German mark and also the Austrian Schilling later, they turned out to be a really big success story. And on that success, on the firm fundament of the mark pegged to the dollar, it's not the mark alone. I always want to remind everybody, pegged means a firm link, a currency link, and towards the dollar. So in many ways, it was the US dollar, but with a different name on it. Yeah? And that this currency has then been the fundament for the Western German recovery and for what is called the economic miracle, obviously added by these great leaders, Adenauer and Erhard, the economic wisdom, the price liberalization of Erhard and the firm Western integration. You know, all this was very important, the new constitution, Lucius Clay, you know, this American-inspired constitution which Germany has, this was really the fundament. But the currency was the first of all these measures, and it was fast, it was done decisively, and it worked very well. And in many ways, you can say that this German mark backed by the dollar has won the Cold War. Obviously, in 1948, the Cold War was going on 40 years more, what I'm saying. But, you know, the fundament was put. The fundament was put because Western German industrial capacity, the human resources of Western Germany, were then firmly available for the Western European economy and for the success of the West. And it was this was making a huge difference over the next 40 years. And because in a nuclear world, obviously, wars between nuclear powers would be a complete disaster. So then this confrontation can only be won economically. And it was the prosperity and differential bit along the German-German border, which ultimately led to the Eastern Germans running away from that kind of poverty and misery, because they saw in television what is possible on the Western side. And after 40 years of, on the one side, the German mark, on the other side, the economic mismanagement of communism, the lack of freedom additionally, and many other aspects, but obviously, it is in the masses, yeah? What they really care then, when they see that others live in this kind of prosperity, technology, science, and possibilities, and you yourself are in living in the 50s, stuck somewhere in the past, yeah? That led the people to run away via Hungary and Bulgaria and Czech Republic, then in the famous historic year of 89. So what I'm talking about is important, the currency. But it was not only the currency. The currency needed also an institutional framework for Western Europe to develop. I've made already this series about the Organization of Economic Development, the Marshall Fund, the European Recovery Fund, this generosity of America to rebuild in a decent, economic, serious way with loans, with repayable grants, but on a cheap interest rate basis, really to restart the economy of Western Germany and all participating countries, but very much focused on Western Germany. And this whole system, which was built up with the Paris-based OSCE, and then it was turned 1960 in OECD, the Organization of Cooperation and Development, what I tend to hope we can transform in the Union of Market Democracies. And I think it's a very good project. Yeah? And it has been very beneficial. Today still, you know, the Kreditanstalt für Wiederaufbau and the Austrian Foundation for Economic Development, AWS, and they are based on this funding, on this capital stock, on what the Americans have started in SME development, in recovery, private sector development. So that's really a historic second level. So it's the mark, it's the shilling, back to the euro. It is obviously the wisdom to develop again Western Germany and Western Austria. And it is also the Marshall Fund. But then comes always a very important, the vision of Jean Monnet, when it was very clear, because he was the personality to understand all the failures of the League of Nations, the economic potential of America. He was involved in the League of Nations. He was involved in French and British war, industrial planning in the First World War and in the Second World War. He knew who won the wars. Yeah, he knew it was America. And he knew the amazing industrial and financial potential of a continental union. And he wanted a Europe designed after the American role model. This is very important to understand. And this is also the competition between the Council of Europe model, which Churchill promoted, and the Jean Monnet model, which is ultimately the European Union of the day. And this was the next big step in the year 1950, the Schuman Declaration, the combining and pooling of the industrially important coal and steel community resources, and really making sure that these war resources, the defense industry resources, coal and steel, and they will be united among the six countries, which were in the beginning the European Community. And this building up of that union from the beginning with the supranational idea, contrary to the Council of Europe, always already this vision of an America with a Supreme Court, with a government, obviously called a commission, obviously, you know, we had to, they worked around it because the resistance to really unite with the former enemy Germany was, of course, very huge, and also the enemy Italy, and, you know, the France and the German antagonism for the last 1,000 years, it didn't evaporate suddenly in the Cold War. It was really still there. So the whole thing, and also the terrible crimes of Germany in the Benelux countries, all these terrible things. So this didn't evaporate and disappear suddenly in harmony. But there was this wisdom that the EU is needed, and from the start that the German-French economies and political systems have to cooperate on an American-style federation in the long term. And this was the second or the third big step, if you want to count it like this, after the Mark, after the Marshall Plan, and then the European Union unification, Messina Conference, and these important discussions, and leading then also to the Rome Treaties in 57. But I would actually like to, you know, this is obviously a big topic, the whole European unification. In that discussion, what I want to do in this episode, it's important to see there was a decision that there can be little done for the occupied territories in the east, which the Soviets had from the Germany. So the decision was to form a state out of the three zones, the French, the British, and the American, to introduce the euro for Ukraine, sorry, the mark backed by the dollar, and to have this decision and really make sure that economically the competition will be won. And actually, you understand already that I want to say that this is the same model which now for free Ukraine, free Georgia, and free Moldova should be applied. But I will come to that. Now comes the fourth big pillar, which is so important to understand, is that the big issue was obviously German rearmament. I'm talking about giving weapons to the former enemy and the German state. You know, of course, today we can differentiate that Germany was ruled by a criminal Nazi dictatorship and a megalomaniac dictator until 45, and then it was a different Germany once it was occupied, liberated, and managed by the Western Allies after 45. But, you know, for most of the people emotionally, it's the same German people. And it's actually the same people, there's no doubt. They're just differently governed, yeah? And so then to give weapons, I'm talking about real weapons, yeah? Military weapons, again, to Germany in the year 55, that was a very controversial debate, yeah? Imagine how many people have died in France, in the Netherlands, in Belgium, and in Italy, by German arms and German criminal activity. So it was very, very difficult to do that, yeah? But the Americans, they insisted that German rearmament, and that means basically all German integration into NATO as a full, independent, sovereign nation, which is fully an ally, is a big step 10 years after the end of the Second World War. And it was possible. And this is one of the big miracles of American post-war planning and post-war institution building in Europe, that NATO was first created in 49, and in 55 it was possible to integrate Western Germany, the Federal Republic of Germany, into NATO. And this was a historic achievement, yeah? It was, of course, you know, the big general, the liberator of Europe, yeah? Mr. Eisenhower, who became then the president, he saw the strategic necessity. He was the man defeating Hitler and his generals. Yeah? He was leading the armies on D-Day. He was liberating Western Germany and Western Europe, basically. His was his leadership. He became then the president, by the way, of the Republican Party. Interestingly enough, nobody would appreciate that today. But anyhow, that's a different discussion to have. So here was the point. Yeah? Then Eisenhower made it possible. Adenauer and Eisenhower, probably the greatest statements of this century, of the 20th century, on the peace side. And they really have made it possible. And here comes the fundament how the Cold War was really won. German rearmament, the German mark, back to the dollar, and the Marshall Fund. And suddenly the prosperity level of Western Europe was within 10 years later, in 65, everybody was talking already about the economic miracle. You know, there was already then, starting 65, a big effort to import labor from Yugoslavia, from Turkey, into Western German industry, because suddenly the things have changed around. It took one decade of a good institutional policy, and there was an economic miracle already. It's quite remarkable in many senses, in historic terms. And then and this economic miracle, and you know, then of course it took time, and there was already this economic miracle so strong, this is important to mention, that in 61 the Eastern Germans had so much population loss, because the people voting with their feet, leaving their houses, families back, yeah, and their friends, went to the Western situation. They left the GDR, because there was nothing to do, and it was miserable, and the security and economics was a disaster. And so they had to wall in their own population. That's basically what this big border fence is, because the people were running away. So to protect themselves from total population loss, they had to build the wall. Of course, in the propaganda, it was against the capitalists. No, it was to keep the people in. And that's what happened in 61. So successful already, this kind of quadruple institutional changes of mark, of NATO, of European Union. In the beginning, the European community was so successful. And let me make also that case, why it was really possible to get the French on board. Yeah, the French didn't use all the Marshall Funds so wisely. They still wanted to be a big empire, and they had this big idea to get Southeast Asia back. They started this big colonial confrontation with the Vietnamese liberation movement, and then it was the big defeat historically in Dien Bien Phu. On one of my slides, I say that Europe was only possible because of the defeat of the French in North Vietnam and that time in Dien Bien Phu. And you can say it like this. You can say also, I heard many speeches that Europe was only born on the battlefields of the Korean War. And obviously, both is true. The history of the European unification is very much connected with the loss of China, with the attack of North Korea on South Korea, with the American response to secure South Korea and to win this war, almost though it was lost twice, but ultimately it was stabilized the front at the current 38 parallel. And so the situation is that this is absolutely connected. And it's also connected with Vietnam. The big defeat was, of course, getting the French a little bit more modest and a little bit more listening to American proposals. And they ultimately conceded and had this wisdom to consent to the German rearmament and NATO integration. It's also connected, no doubt, the whole history. It's connected to this unilateral action of the French and the British, especially the British on the Suez Canal, together with Israel, and the American opposition to that unilateral action, absolutely. And it's also connected to Austrian neutrality deal, which led then to the revolution of the Hungarians, because they also said, you know, if the Austrian can get neutrality, why cannot we get neutrality? Why do we have to keep the Soviets here? Then came this big crackdown in November 56 of the Hungarian Revolution, and ultimately all this has led to such an escalation level that European unification, the signature of the treaties in Rome, that was finally possible, and also NATO membership. It goes in that sequence, and that was really very decisive years between 47, the decision of the US to really allow economic development again in Western Germany, and then to actively support it with a new currency, with the Marshall Plan, the institutional arrangements of NATO and the EU, and also the defeat of the European, Western European imperial powers in the Middle East and in Vietnam. And also, I think, if you look at it, ultimately, there can be always a debate. What was the most important issue? Was it the Korea War? Obviously, now it's called the Forgotten War. But it was in that time, from 50 to 53, certainly the most important struggle between the Soviet Union and China on the one side, and North Korea, obviously, and also the free world. And it was a war led by the UN, under the flag of the UN, to make sure South Korea stays free. And it was an important struggle. And so ultimately, you can always say Korea, Vietnam, Suez Canal, all this, Budapest, they led to bring Europe together. So it was not a marriage of love in Europe. I have to disappoint anybody who believes in our peace narrative of today. It was by a common enemy. It was the threat of a Soviet takeover of Asia and of Europe, which has ultimately united Europe and led to this historic decision of America to stay engaged in the European continent and have this long-term, stable, permanent alliance of NATO created. This was, of course, a historic thing because they have always seen the retreat and after the First World War, has then led to the Second World War in many ways. So a permanent containment of the Soviet Union was necessary. And so it happened. What does that mean today? And what's the meaning of all this long story, which maybe you knew anyhow, is for Ukraine today? I say we have to solve the Ukrainian question and also Georgia and Moldova the same way. We cannot militarily liberate, and we will not, yeah? Crimea and Donbass, or Abkhazia, South Ossetia, or Transnistria. These are Russian-occupied regions, like the GDR. So what we can do? We can just do the following. We can back the Rivna and the Lari and the Lei in Moldova to the dollar. we can introduce the euro directly. My recommendation since a long time, like we have done it in Kosovo and Montenegro. So let's have directly the euro, much better. Anyhow, we have the European currency now, and this is a different situation than 48. Yeah? So let's introduce, let's first fix the currency. Secondly, let's make sure that all get also this instrument of pre-accession. For this, they need to have the EU potential candidate status. So let's get the EU potential candidate status. Then there is the IPA funds flowing, and this works very well for all the accession countries. And obviously, then let's get them in NATO. I mean, if we could in 55 get the BRD into NATO, then definitely we can free Ukraine, free Georgia, free Moldova can join NATO as well. Obviously, that doesn't include Crimea and Donbass, but I remind everybody that also until 71, when there was this German-German agreement under the appeasement period of Brandt, who was actually assisted by an Eastern German spy on that one, but that's a different story. But the thing was that it was very clear that only the BRD was member of NATO. And the tragedy of the revolutions of 53 and other times, and 56 and 86, you know, there can be little done for the people who live under the Soviet yoke or now under the Russian yoke. But what can be done is that their prosperity situation in free Ukraine, free Georgia, free Moldova will be so much better that one day in 20, 30, 40 years, the differential and the economic income situation between Crimea and occupied Donbass and South Ossetia, Abkhazia, towards the European Union and NATO members, Moldova and Ukraine and Georgia, is so big as it was on the Eastern German border, the German-German border. And people will run, and this region can then simply join the federal state, NATO and ally and EU member Ukraine, and then they simply integrate like Saxonia, Thuringia, Brandenburg did in the wonderful year 1990. And that's the settlement we can offer them. And in the between, they stay Russian-occupied territories, and we build a fence. That's basically the situation, not a big one on our side. They will anyhow build a bigger one like the Berlin Wall, because most of the people by time will want to leave. And I call it's again the prosperity differential which won the First World War, and it's the prosperity, security, freedom differential will win, which will win the Second World Cold War as well. And this is what we have to do. And this is what we can learn from the founding fathers of the West, of Truman, Adenauer, also for today. So I call for President Zelensky, be the Adenauer of Ukraine. And also for Mrs. Maidu and for Mrs. Georgian President, be the Adenauer. That is important. Look how he did it. It was not easy. He was accused to be a traitor. He was accused to leave the Eastern Germans to the Soviets. But what should he have done? He had the choice. And compared with the weak treasonable factor, treason is maybe a hard word. Yeah. Nah, that's not good. I apologize. Yeah. You know, they had no other choice as well. But the Austrians opted for neutrality, and they opted for this kind of softer way. And obviously they got the unity. And obviously for Adenauer it was very difficult to be accused as the one who left the Eastern Germans back. And he was very angry when he heard about the Austrian neutrality deal. But in that time, and also because of the geographic situation of Austria, maybe for Austria in the year 55, that was the reasonable thing to do, because Austria basically in the West was only the mountains and some industrial cities like Linz and Graz were left to the Americans. But the most industrial parts and Vienna, also it had four zones, but the most everything around was obviously occupied by the Soviets. So that's the choice ultimately. And I call for everybody to be the Adenauer, to join. It's not easy. It's not leaving all these regions behind. And that's always something I get accused of. But you think that you are such a friend of Crimea and then you want to leave them to Russia? No, but there is no way. If they not voluntarily leave by over time, and then there is no way to militarily retake. Yeah? So our care and the Ukrainian care obligation ultimately goes for the people who live in Ukraine. And they will be much better served by a firm currency, by the euro, by NATO membership, and by an EU membership. And then this question will always be open. There's no need ever to recognize, and I think we will never recognize, I'm actually sure, and this occupation aggression of these five regions. And then you make a constitutional change, write in the constitution, you are welcome, this is your spot, this is the region Crimea, this is the region eastern Ukraine, whenever you are ready, you're welcome. This is how the Western Germans did it. And then the moment came. And there will be also the moment for Russian weakness one day. Maybe it will take 10 years, maybe 20 years, maybe 40 years. The first Cold War took 40 years, but it was the Soviet Union. It was double the size and multiple of the enemy level. And we were also much weaker. It was a much smaller West. It was a much smaller free world. It was a much poorer Western world. Yeah? And it took 40 years. If you see, and the Russian world is now shrinking. It's only half the size, and it's in, economically, it's only, let's say, one-tenth if you count together all the free world, maybe one, not even 5%. Yeah? And of the whole free world together, I think it's not even 1% the Russian GDP, yeah, of the world economy, maybe 1.5, if now they have 1.5 trillion, 85. So anyhow, the exact numbers, everybody can look up. But I claim and I call that this German model, how the Cold War in its fundament was won, of course it took time. This is what Ukraine needs to learn. This is what Georgia needs to adopt. This is the role model for Moldova. And this is the way we can win this second Cold War over time. And I call for the EU potential candidate status, NATO map. And for 2024, we repeat the big enlargement round of NATO, which we had in 2004. So 20 years later, again, 12 countries in more. I've made this podcast already with the six neutral countries, also Bosnia and Kosovo and Serbia, if Serbia wants. But of course, Ukraine, Georgia, Moldova, there's no doubt they want to join. And then 5 years later, they can join the European Union. This is the best model. And this is the way to win on the historic model of the Western German integration into the Western European and transatlantic structures between 48 and 57, 58. Thanks a lot.